Okay, folks, welcome back. This is Yankees Unloaded. I'm Jake Ellenbogen. He is Gary Sheffield Jr., and we are back for our 40th episode, believe it or not. We're already at 40. So for the people that were thinking that we just up and left after 39 episodes, no. Obviously, with Mother's Day, Gary, you had some travel. I'm still settling in with the moving, although I think we're somewhat good now on that.
Backdrop's looking sick. I know we just talked about it. It looks great.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. It's just, it's been a lot of work, and not just me. My father's helped me out. My roommate Jake has helped me out. Yes, his name is Jake too. But yeah, you know, it's been fun. It's been a journey, man, to put this all together. A lot more.
We missed a lot of winning too, by the way.
I know. I hope us coming back isn't gonna, you know, mean like, I mean, come on. We are the mush if we come back and they lose to the White Sox tomorrow. No doubt about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you lose to the White Sox, something's wrong. And I'll say this.
Well, it's Cortez on the started mound. This show. He's the shakiest of the five right now.
I think everyone can agree with that, right? Nestor Cortez is probably our worst starter. And when Gerrit Cole comes back, he's probably our sixth best guy. But I do think there's an argument. I mean, in my opinion, I think Stroman's kind of shown what his ceiling is. Nestor really hasn't. Nestor's kind of, he had a few good starts, and then he's been a little shaky his last three starts or so. So, I mean, we're going to see. We're going to see what happens with Nestor. Oh, I don't think we love his approach, which his approach doesn't necessarily miss bats. And Matt Blake, he's one of those guys who's like, okay, I need speed. I need velocity, right? I need spin. I need location. And Nestor's one of those guys who's like, okay, I'm leaning in on location, but I've got 91, 90, 89 every once in a while. Like, that's not necessarily Matt Blake's forte. So to see that, and then obviously you don't see the location. Well, when Nestor's not locating, he's not very good. So, and you see the same thing with Stroman, by the way. Stroman, his last three starts has not been good. His, I think, two or three starts ago, he had 10 walks and two starts, came into that series against Houston. You expected him to get touched up. He did. He got touched up. He did figure out a way to give them some length, but overall, I mean, it was a bit of a struggle bus. And then obviously you saw today where Clark Schmidt has just been, dude, I'm not going to sit up here on a podcast and tell you guys that I thought Clark Schmidt could be this, because I didn't even think it was possible, let alone that he was going to put it out in 2024. So, I mean, we're talking about a dude with an ERA in the low twos. Remember that projection I gave Carlos Rodon earlier this year? I said he was a 2.5 ERA guy. That was Clark Schmidt. And if there's anybody in the comment section that's telling me they saw this in Clark Schmidt that wasn't like 2.5 years ago, I'm calling you out, man. You're lying to me.
Yeah, that's probably very unlikely. He has been outstanding, not just this start, the last start. And I think, you know, I was texting you and I feel like he was climbing a mountaintop, kept falling off. I made jokes about it. Obviously he can't get through the third, you know, time through the order, but he has the last two games, and this game was a career high 8 innings pitched, which, by the way, give Aaron Boone a lot of credit for allowing that, because nowadays in MLB, you know, he has 100 pitches, take him out. Like, you know, doesn't matter if he's dominant, but no, he kept him in there. And, you know, I think, you know, it's a blowout in a sense that 5 runs, we talk about it, that's pretty much an automatic Yankee win. But today, especially, the Twins could not hit Clark Schmidt. He only gave up 3 hits. He had 8 strikeouts. That's another thing, Gary. Clark Schmidt is striking guys out now. Okay. He doesn't just have good stuff and he's getting, you know, soft ground balls and generating soft contact. This is a guy who is really starting to dominate batters. And, you know, I think that is a really good sign for the Yankees, obviously. But when you consider what they're doing, I mean, they outscored the Twins 14-1 in this series.
They had one run the whole series. This is ridiculous.
This is an absolute domination. I mean, the Twins are a good baseball team. This isn't just a, you know, a joke team. I mean, they went on the road and they beat the brakes off of a really good baseball team. And I'll say this, if I'm a Twins fan, there's no chance in hell I want to see the Yankees again. You know, Gary, how sometimes he'll be like, I want revenge. This isn't one of those times. The Twins are
Minnesota. No, come on now. Minnesota is not one of those teams that wants revenge. Minnesota and their entire fan base, they know what Yankees, they know what we do to them.
Oh, come on now.
They know exactly what we do to them over history now, right? It doesn't matter. And let's be clear what I said, Jake. I said this Minnesota team, Minnesota was playing some pretty good baseball these last few weeks. I thought they've been playing a really good brand of baseball. They've spun it well on the mound. They've been able to score runs. They came into this series and the Yankees just shut them down. They had no shot.
Absolutely.
And that was a surprise because remember I told you, as long as we can figure out a way to maybe take a game, we're talking about taking a game on the road against a really good Minnesota team, for them to come out and just dominate this team was a statement. And like I said before, depending on what happens in this series, it's a tone setter for the entire week because you're talking about us transitioning into a Chicago White Sox series that, frankly, we're coming in again the way mentally we came into that Oakland series. We want to go in and sweep these guys. It's Major League Baseball. It's much, much harder than what people make it out to be to sweep some of these teams. The Chicago White Sox are one of those teams you want to go out there and sweep. I feel like we have the momentum to go get that done. And frankly, the right bats are swinging it hot right now.
I agree. And we'll get into the hitting real quick. Want to touch on, you know, since we missed, obviously, Tuesday, May 14th, Rodon, very good, efficient outing. Ian Hamilton came in, looked like Ian Hamilton. Clay Holmes still hasn't given up a run. We haven't been on this podcast in three games, I think we missed. And Clay Holmes still hasn't given up a run. So you love that. Then you have, you know, the next game, the 4-0 game against the Twins. Stroman looked really efficient. Luke Weaver has been a story, man. To turn around a season the way he has, he's now got a 2.25 ERA. I mean, crazy. And then, you know, today, you know, Gonzalez is still pitching well. And Clark Schmidt has a gem in which you only need to use one guy in the bullpen. And to be honest with you, if they kept Clark Schmidt in, they still win the game if he does a complete game.
How easy is that, by the way?
But I understand.
Bringing out one guy out the pen?
It's awesome. I mean, they're not in this position without their pitching. Bullpen, starting pitchers. And, man, I'm not going to lie. One of our first episodes when we said trust in the kids over going after Snell, that is aging well. Because the first episode, I think when we talked about Snell, you and I were definitely like, oh yeah, you know, I'm all for getting him. They need him, all that. But here's the thing. It's not flip-flopping. We came to the decision to go with Heel based on new knowledge. And I think that's important in sports media and podcasting and what have you. Because people always say, oh, he just flip-flops. It's like, no, I gained new information, and now based on that new information, I can sit here and I can, you know, stand by a belief I no longer have just because I had it back then, and oh, I'm no longer a flip-flopper. But then, is that really genuine? Because in a sense, you know, I'm sitting here like, I changed my mind, but now I'm faking it to essentially make it? Like, that's dumb. And so I think
we acknowledge the why. I think that's the gist, is that we had a conclusion about Blake Snell and the fact that he should be a Yankee. We were both very consistent about that at the beginning of the offseason. But then you fast forward to later on in the offseason, everyone's saying it's a pissing contest. Everyone's staring off at Scott Boras. What are you going to do with your client? And as time went on, Jake, both you and I both agreed, this is taking too long. They're skipping the process of spring training. Very similar, and this is part of the reason why we use Carlos Rodon as a perfect example. Carlos Rodon was dealing with injuries at the beginning of last year. So we saw what it's like to have a Cy Young level player miss time at the beginning of the year. And then you fast forward to today, where Blake Snell he looks like a shell of himself. He doesn't even look like anything of what you saw last year. And then of course, Jake, when you brought up the point of, you know, Gary, I don't really think that we should bring in a Blake Snell, and I agreed. Part of what you were saying was what we already have on this roster in terms of potential. And you mentioned Luis Heel. Now, did you necessarily think that Luis Gil was going to be this fast? Maybe not. But Luis Gil is showing already the type of talent that he is. Carlos Rodon getting off the mat at all, which he absolutely has been a major shot in the arm. And then, like I said, as the conclusion to this, is that Gerrit Cole not pitching. Yeah, did we want him to be healthy for this season at the beginning of the year? Absolutely. But there are positives to this. The one positive is that he's not going to put on 225 innings, and that's a good thing. So now that Gerrit Cole is going to be coming back fresh, and then the most important hitter of this lineup in Aaron Judge, who we've talked about countless times, and his lack of production, he's here now. Aaron Judge this series was the best player on the planet. He had 6 extra base hits in the last 2 games we played. That is ridiculous. That is not human. That's not dudes on MLB The Show playing on veteran aren't doing that. Okay, so let's be very clear. Juan Soto was essentially non-existent this whole series. It didn't even come close to mattering. Gerrit Cole didn't play, right? When that's happening, the league is in trouble. And so now we're talking about that unfair pairing of Juan Soto and Aaron Judge at the 2-3 spot. Now the Yankees are a major threat in the American League because we're talking about a team that just went into Minnesota, thrashed that organization. We just thrashed them. We buried them. They weren't competitive in the first inning. The building was lifeless. And you watched that game. There was not, it was watching Yes Network today. It was like watching a funeral. That was literally what I saw out there. And Michael Kay, the entire broadcast will tell you, at no point did it feel like today's game was in jeopardy. The Yankees came out, took care of business. They threw strikes. They made the plays that were at them. Yeah, it was difficult to watch Rizzo toss the ball every time a ground ball was hit to him. But overall, the Yankees were just playing a brand of baseball that just is going to beat anybody. And it's just a matter of timing. If they play this way, it doesn't matter if they play the Dodgers, the Astros, who cares? They're going to go out there and dominate. And this is Yankees baseball that we all hope we'd see.
I agree. And well, before I get into the batting, you know, in more depth, I have to throw something out there. So yesterday, not today, but yesterday's game, do you remember what Jeff Nelson in the booth was going crazy over, like the grip of like the way Pablo, whatever his name is, I totally am blanking.
Oh, Pablo Lopez.
Pablo Lopez. Yeah, he was throwing like a certain, I was it Pablo Sanchez.
It could have been, they needed Pablo Sanchez. I mean, let's be honest with you. They needed him.
They did. But it was just funny. Am I the only one that caught that? Did you catch that? How he was so obsessed with like the, like he's like, oh yeah. And like when you're trying to throw a cutter, sometimes they put like a finger up like this. And I'm like, what is happening right now? Like, and it's funny because I don't have anything against Jeff Nelson, but man, that guy is like overanalyzing so hard. It's kind of funny.
I'm going to have to bring Jeff on this podcast. I know Jeff pretty well. And to be honest with you, like sometimes when you're on the broadcast, you want to go into detail about what you're seeing. And some of those details are good. Some of them are terrible. And I'll say this, if I was on a broadcast, I'm sure I'd bring out a detail. People would be like, who the hell cares?
No, I thought it was kind of funny because he kept going with the grip, and I just don't know if everybody really cared about it. But hey, I mean, good on him. At least he's doing something there, and you know, not just like staring at rainbows or whatever.
I'm not gonna lie though, I really like the details of baseball. Like they brought up on the broadcast today, and I kind of touched on it. But Anthony Rizzo, when he gets a ground ball, and we've kind of talked about his defense, it's been a little shaky at the beginning of the year, and it really hasn't. It's bounced back probably to the middle of the pack, but it's not typical Rizzo. But overall, he swung a really hot bat. But defensively, Anthony Rizzo will not field a ground ball and run it over to first base. For the love of God, Anthony, field the ball. If you have no opportunity, trust me, if you have no chance, I played baseball, toss it to the guy who's covering the base. It's his job. But the pitcher shouldn't be sprinting over to first base.
Every time.
Every single time there's a ground ball to you. I know that for certain that can't possibly be the best way. I know that because you have to field the ball. That's first. Obviously, that's mission number one. And then you have to toss the ball. It has to be a good feed. And then the pitcher has to not overrun the base, which we literally just saw Marcus Stroman do in his last start.
Not only
thankfully,
that,
they overturned the call.
Injury, man.
Absolutely.
I risk injury. I don't really, it's one of the things that I understand that's the game of baseball, but I actually don't like when the pitcher covers the bag. Watching him run over there, I get, you know, feeling of, you know, Chengming Wong getting hurt rounding third. You know what I mean? It's just like unnecessary running and too many variables. It's honestly kind of why I don't love the way the Yankees always use their bullpen, because I think if you have three guys now, it's no different than, you know, a three-leg parlay versus a six-leg parlay. When you add more variables, you're just giving yourself more of a chance to screw up, because now you don't have to just count on three humans. You have to count on six.
You should only count on that play unless there's nothing. There's no other way.
Exactly. When you are Rizzo in that sense, you should only be counting on yourself. Like having to bring a pitcher who, by the way, could be exhausted. He's throwing 95 every pitch. I mean, I know I don't have to tell you about Carlos Rodon, and every single time the jersey is practically sticking to him, he is absolutely drenched in sweat. And you're telling me now that guy has to run over after throwing 98 pitches in Major League Baseball, and he has to run over and catch and cover the first base. There's got to be, it's pretty much the only way, but there's got to be a better way. And I think, I will say this, if we had like a scenario where somebody got hurt or something and it was a big name because of that, we'd start to see more athletic first basemen. We'd start to see, you know, younger first basemen.
Well, is it about his athleticism, or is it just a choice? Because it seems to me it's his athleticism.
I don't think he believes in his athleticism. Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you're flipping it at first, it's your athleticism. You really don't believe running over is the best option. You really don't think you're fast enough, or you're that worried about an injury, which in that case, you should be a DH and DH only. But
I think that's fair. I think it's a bit of both, to be quite honest with you. I really think that Rizzo is more comfortable flipping the ball as opposed to taking it himself. I think that it's a bit of both. It's like the mental side of the game. And then another part of it is that, Rizzo's not the most fleet of foot. He's not going to outrun a guy to first base. But again, like, I'm seeing some balls that are 5, 6, 7 feet off the bag. You should have no problem getting back over to first base. I shouldn't be watching Stroman and Clark Schmidt stretching out like crazy at first base. It just doesn't make sense. So I won't harp on it too long.
It's worth mentioning.
It's definitely worth mentioning. There's obviously some really good things, some weird things happening with the Yankees. And I think Jake kind of transitioning, one of those things is, I guess, the story right now with Juan Soto. And Juan Soto and that whole contract situation.
I did predict this, if you remember.
You did predict this, and then, of course,
It hasn't happened yet. I understand that, but...
Yeah, I tried to extend an olive branch there and say, I at least suggest what history says. And history, as of now, says, and this is just the cliche, is that Scott Boras wants to take his clients to free agency. He did it this last offseason. He failed miserably. He fell on his face. It's well documented. We all laughed. But then now you transition into this season, and he's got the number one client in baseball currently that's headed towards free agency in Juan Soto. And interestingly enough, Juan Soto, because Hal Steinbrenner said, I'm open to talking to Juan Soto. And Juan Soto replied to Jack Curry of Yes Network, saying that, let's see what he said. He said, my door's always open. Whenever he wants to start talking to Scott and all his people, they're always open to hearing what he has to say. Now, of course, everyone wants to hear what an owner wants to say. You want to hear numbers, because even if you plan on taking this to free agency, you want to hear what your owner has to say, regardless if you have any intention whatsoever to sign this contract. Because let's just say he turned down that $440 million contract, right? It's a well-documented number. So a lot of people look at it and say, wow, he turned down 440, so he must be looking for something significantly higher. But in my opinion, Michael Kay brought up an excellent point on the broadcast today. and it's something no one talks about. Now, thankfully, it was brought up on Yes's broadcast, is that that $440 million deal was stretched out to a point that no one seems to talk about. It was at an AAV of south of $30 million a year. Well, if you're going to sign Juan Soto to a marriage of a contract, you're not getting him for 29 a year. I'm here to tell you that right now. And Jake, I think we all can agree he's a much better player than 29 million a year. Whether people think that he's worth it or not, I mean, that's neither here nor there. He knows after the type of work that he's put in and the type of contracts we're already seeing, and obviously you see Shohei at 70 million a year, he's not getting 29 million to be the next coming of Ted Williams. I promise you guys, it's not going to be that. So reality is that I am sure Juan Soto and his camp want to hear from Hal Steinbrenner, because Hal Steinbrenner is going to at least throw a ballpark number. It's probably going to be slightly lowballed, but you can use that to your advantage as you go into free agency. And one last thing, Jake, Jose Altuve, who I believe is represented by Scott Boras, signed a contract extension with Houston. It was an extension.
I was going to say this,
very different, very different, right? Than anything you've ever seen Scott Boras do. But what it goes to show you, Jake, is that Scott Boras is absolutely open to bringing guys back to an organization if that player tells him to do so. Blake Snell didn't do that, did he? Blake Snell said, I just want a Cy Young. And Blake Snell's another type of player who's had up and downs. He's been excellent in Tampa. He's been atrocious before. We've seen it. And then we've seen him be excellent again, winning a Cy Young. So once that happened, Blake Snell said, I don't want to take any chances. Get me that 8-9 year contract. Get me paid. And that right there was the reason Blake Snell's situation panned out the way it did. But Juan Soto's the type of player, he already turned down $440 million. He's the type of player, he has the choice to go where he wants to go. That's the reality of the situation. He's going to get his money. If he really wants to be a Yankee, he'll tell Scott Boras, let's get to work now. Get in the office. Let's figure it out. If it takes us till three quarters of the way through the season, so be it. But the similar to what you saw out of Altuve, get me that type of deal.
I like that you brought that up. I was literally going to bring that up right after you said your piece, because Altuve, Boras tried. He was like, we can't test the market. He's like, I don't want to be anywhere else. Make it happen. Another thing we have to remember, even though it's seldom, I guess, utilized, used, enforced, the agent works for the player, not the other way around. And so there is absolutely a scenario here where if Juan Soto wants to stay with the Yankees and Boras tries to play hardball and ruin that relationship, he could fire Scott Boras. And it wouldn't be the first time. One, Scott Boras has been fired by a client, but two, it wouldn't be the first time that a client has fired his agent. And this is the type of stuff we talk about. You know, you look at Altuve, superstar, MVP, World Series champion. He wants to stay in Houston. That's his word. Okay. Boras, at any point, if he tries to overstep that, which he can, it's a free country. We all have free will. The consequence could be his, you know, his guy, his client, Jose Altuve, saying, okay, I'll find somebody who can get it done. And that's the reality of it. So I think too often we go, not going to happen because Boras won't do this or Boras won't do that. I think this is real. I think this really could happen. And I think Soto wants to be a Yankee so much so, I think he wants to also get paid, but I don't think he's tipping any hand or anything, but I guarantee you it's almost eating at him how bad he wants to remain in the Bronx. He wants to be the next Jeter figure, essentially, which, I mean, I guess Aaron Judge has been that, but I'll say this, Gary, if he signs with the Yankees, he will not play in another uniform. He will retire a Yankee.
We agree there.
Like, Jake, there's no...
I think this is a PR stunt. I just thought about it. So think of it this way.
Well, I kind of do as well, but...
Because you have to remember, Hal Steinbrenner agreed to go on a podcast, okay? That's the reality of the situation. He's agreeing to go on a show He obviously, he knows the questions at hand. He's the owner of the team. Okay. He can dictate what he's asked. He's like the Kim Jong-un of Yankees, Yankees stuff.
That's tough.
Yeah. No. And what I mean by it is that he can control anything he wants. If he goes on Yes Network, he knows, hey, don't ask me this question. It's not going to be asked. That's just the reality of the situation.
He's not going to Tom Brady it and say, don't say that shit again.
No, you know what he'll say? He'll say that before the broadcast starts. Because You have to think about it. Are the guys at Yes going to be controlled, and a lot of us at Yes are in Yankees podcasting going to be controlled? No. I believe that all those guys ask the questions that they want to be asked. But if they know a certain question that they're going to ask is going to directly negatively impact this organization in their pursuit to bring a player back, they are not going to ask that question. Now, Hal Steinbrenner came out and he answered the question and said, I absolutely want to get to the table and I want to discuss an extension. I would love to do that because Juan Soto has been nothing but brilliant in pinstripes. He's been excellent. Personality, play, everything about him, leadership has been top notch. He's exactly the fit the Yankees needed. But having said that, once you answer that question, now the ball is in Juan Soto and Scott Boras's. There, it's in their park. So now you have to say, what are you going to do with this information? Now it leaves Scott Boras and Soto in a situation where you have to say, oh, the owner wants to talk to us about an extension. What's he going to say? Oh, we're not open to talking contract extension. What's he supposed to say in this situation? Other than if you want to talk to us, you can reach out to us and we'll discuss business. He's not going to say, I'm not talking contract stuff in the season, because what it seems like is you're being milked. And the whole narrative that Juan Soto wants to be in pinstripes, there's a little chink in the armor when they throw the ball in your court and you say, oh, I don't want to discuss business long-term with the Yankees. I'll see you in the offseason. Because that message says, I'm going to milk you for everything you have to offer. That's what that says. So it's very difficult for me to sit here and think that this is all in good faith, like good faith conversation, because I understand that a lot of this stuff is narrative driven. A lot of fans are going to look at, and they looked at, I know we all tend to put our blinders on and act like we forgot, but when Aaron Judge became a Yankee and everyone said, oh, he wants to be a Yankee, he wants to be a Yankee, I had people telling me he was inches from signing with the San Francisco Giants, and not just as a ploy, he was going to go to the San Francisco Giants. And then of course, when they reach out to him and say, oh, well, hold on a second, we'll go $360 million. We'll go to captain, right? When all those things were on the table, it was a no-brainer decision for Judge to come back to pinstripes, but that stuff wasn't always on the table, Jake. Do you see what I'm saying? So
no, I definitely see what you're saying. And I mean, if Judge can leave the Yankees, then Soto could definitely leave. But I really believe this is where he's going to play his baseball.
Absolutely.
And I think they get a deal done towards the end of August. That's what I think. I think we're going to see that. I mean, think about it. They get a contract extension done with Juan Soto. What does that do for the team morale? I mean, there's something about that, watching your guy get the bag, but also knowing he's going to be around long term. Not everybody is going to feel the effects. Probably Gleyber Torres is gone after this year, if we're being honest. I mean, it's middle of May and he's hitting 200. That's his month. Rizzo, who knows, right? But guys like Judge and Volpe and Schmidt and Heal and Cole, okay, Wells, I mean, those guys we know will be there next year. And they know, like, if he gets it signed, they're like, okay, that's awesome. And this isn't just he's a good player. This is a generational talent. This is a guy who changes everything about a room that he walks into. And it's not just me saying this, who's never met him. No, his teammates say it all the time. Every interview seems to be something about Juan Soto and how he's great for team morale and how he helped Oswaldo Cabrera hit. You know, I mean, like, there's so many things that, you know, so many times where Juan Soto's been named in a discussion that he had no business being a part of, right? They were just,
he's
like
the co-heartbeat of this team. Captain. And he's our second most important player in the whole roster. And maybe he's our second best player who's ever been a Yankee the last 15 years. I mean, it's saying quite a bit.
I think Judge is kind of the brawn, and I think Soto is the brain of the operation. That's what I would say.
Okay.
I think those two, because now that you have Judge, well, teleporting from hitting 100 to 262 overnight, that's the best way I can say it.
His literally just teleported. Photos, by the way.
I know. It's insane. Judge also now has over 10 home runs. So, you know, he has been on an absolute tear. By the way, his numbers since he had his first career ejection are going to be studied in time. That is going to be something we look back on August and be like, man, what on earth did they do? Like, everyone in the league is going to hate that umpire because that lit a fire under Judge's ass. He has been completely different since. And you could say, it's Aaron Judge. He'll figure it out. And yeah, that, I mean, there's a lot of truth to that. But sometimes you do need that little, you know, kick in the ass. And I think Judge got that with that ejection, to be honest with you. I think he's really making pitchers pay. You know, today, oh, we're not going to throw a fastball to Judge. Okay, they threw one fastball and he smoked it for a double. I mean, that's really been Judge. If it's not a double, it's a home run. If it's not a home run or a double, then it's a base hit. And if it's not that, it's a walk. He's been unconscious at the plate.
He's hitting .347 in his last 21 games. So if that tells you anything.
Right now, he's the best hitter in the league. Right now.
Yeah, 8 homers. So what are we sitting here talking about? We got nothing. I mentioned this earlier. Nothing out of Juan Soto this series. He was completely irrelevant. And
didn't matter.
Aaron didn't even come close to mattering because our pitching, again, was our strength. But like you said, Jake, you bring this up over and over again. When the Yankees score 4 or 5 runs, this game's a wrap. It's over. The Yankees are like that. And if we're scoring, and you're talking about Juan Soto, that's the one player. Remember I said that you can't necessarily just assume Aaron Judge is playing this poorly, that he's just going to get up off the mat because we don't know technically if he's hurt. We don't know what the deal is. It could just be a bad year. We know Juan Soto is going to return to form. He had a bad 4 or 5 games. Juan Soto in this series against Chicago is going to be deadly. I'm comfortable saying that. And we now know Aaron Judge's return to form. So what now? What that means, and I want to help people understand what it means, is that the most important piece to the New York Yankees in Gerrit Cole will be able to return when he wants to return, when the Yankees need him to return, which is whenever he's fully healthy and ready to play. Whenever he's ready to play, because as of now, they're giving updates that he's feeling good and, you know, they're going to go step by step by step. They can take all the steps necessary. And that's something that playing this way and being 30 and 15, it awards you that opportunity to take your time as opposed to rushing and saying, well, look what Baltimore's doing. Well, look what they're doing. They're over their skis. And it puts you in a situation where all of us sitting at home can say, well, why would you bring him back? Why would you rush him? People's jobs are on the line. They want to rush the best players back on the field because it could mean saving their ass. And now that the Yankees are the best team in the American League East, as of now, a lot of baseball to be played. Now we're in a position where teams may be in trouble. And this is where we're not trying not to give Baltimore credit because they deserve all the credit in the world. They've been spectacular the last year and a half of baseball, to be quite honest with you. But the Yankees, in my opinion, Jake, surprised some people this year. It seemed like, yeah, we got Juan Soto, but we failed on Yamamoto. We were a little light on the starting rotation. We got Stroman early. So what were we really doing there, right? And come to find out, the Yankees had some tricks up their sleeve. They didn't go get Wandy, but they brought out guys that frankly picked up the slack. The Victor Gonzalez's, like all those guys and seeing guys to return to form. Obviously, Loaisiga being out didn't help, but it just has not mattered. This team is pitching the hell out of it and their bats are awoken. We are awake.
they
we're winning games, man. It's fun to watch. It was a bad time for us to stop podcasting because we just started winning in bunches.
Well, hopefully the algorithm doesn't kill us for it, because I mean there is a chance it does. But you know, I want to give them a lot of credit because there was a guy, and I'm totally blanking on his name, that either the Cubs signed or the Mets signed. They did the same thing. They went to get Daisuke Matsuzaka. He goes to the Red Sox, so they signed Kagawa. There was another Japanese pitcher who I'm totally blanking on his name, and he might even be pitching well.
Yeah, no, you're talking about the – I know who you're talking about. Give me 1 second to pull this up.
More veteran guy. I think he was 31.
No, I know who you're talking about. You're talking about the Shota Imanaga.
Yes.
Who nobody wanted, by the way. Nobody wanted this guy. Like, we never even talked about him.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. He's been insane, right? But I want to say I like that the Yankees didn't go after him.
Why?
Because I feel like that was the traditional way. Oh, we missed out on, you know, Yamamoto. Let's go after Shota Imanaga like we did with Kagawa. And obviously this guy's way better than Kagawa. Mm-hmm. But I agreed with it because if they go out and get him, yes, he's great. First off, we have no idea if he can pitch in the Bronx.
Right.
Let's start with that. Second, you don't have Heel or Schmidt pitching right now. So you disrupt that. He's 30. Okay. He'll be around for a little bit, but him being much better out of the gate than Yamamoto is not a shock to me. He's a veteran pitcher. He's been pitching for a while.
Yeah, he's 30. He's my age. Dude, the dude's in the prime of his career the way I am.
The prime. You love that. Man. But do you see my point here? I feel like...
No, I see. It was a consolation prize, and you felt like the way the Yankees used to run it,
they would have just been we'll take him.
We really want Yamamoto.
Yeah.
We didn't get Yamamoto, which is exactly who we wanted. He chose to go to LA, or the Dodgers gave a better offer, however you want to put it. And then what the Yankees would have normally done was they would have spun and thrown, okay, he signed with Chicago for $54 million. The Yankees would have thrown $65 at him, made sure, oh, he wants to play for the Cubs? Well, you're coming here to play with the Yankees. That's what they normally would have done. And based on what the Yankees told us coming into this offseason was that Cashman and Cohen and all those guys, they were throwing all their eggs in that basket. We're putting all of our scouting department into this guy. So if the Yankees got a Japanese pitcher, it was going to be Yamamoto. They didn't get him. So yeah, you don't want to just throw $60 million at a dude. And of course, in hindsight, if we knew it was going to be this dude, then yeah, it would have been awesome. But that would be guesswork. And that's not conducive to the situation that the Yankees are in. The Yankees need something solidified, something proven. And yeah, is Japanese baseball excellent? Absolutely. But does it mean because you pitched well in Japan that you are going to pitch well in major leagues? No, it doesn't mean that. Of course, recent history says that Japanese pitchers are just, they're solidified in this league. I mean, these guys seem to be next level. Like, this is not pitching in the Mexican league. This is the Japanese league. When dudes pitch well over there, it seems like they transition well, but does it mean I'm just going to throw $75 million? I don't know, right? It depends how much work you put into scouting. So I agree with you, Jake. I actually really agree with you. I know it's hard to say. You see a guy with an 0.96 ERA. He looks like Clayton Kershaw right now. It's just disgusting. He's gross. So I completely agree with what you just said.
Yeah, I feel like that's just us evolving from being, you know, hindsight Hanks at the end of the day. But I mean, I really believe that. Shout out to the Cubs, by the way. Jameson Taillon, he's killing it. And Hayden Wesneski is killing it. And I mean, we've been really positive on this show, but the Wesneski trade really bugs me still because they traded a starting caliber pitcher, I would say maybe the third guy in the rotation, for a guy who's pitched, I don't know, two games at Frost before he got hurt, and he was terrible. I
don't know how many times he pitched. He was atrocious. And people keep
supposedly
going to
be
him.
Back. I don't know.
You know, people keep telling me that. I said, hey, did you see this Miller guy for Oakland? And of course, you mentioned him to me, and I hadn't watched him. Then we went and watched that series at the stadium, and I said, did you guys just see that shit?
I know.
Are you kidding me? And then you know what people told me? Well, I mean, I wouldn't give up this prospect. You know, that's typical. I think that's a fair argument. But then mm-hmm. they told me, well, what about Efros? Like, what about some of those roster spots? You can send Efros to Japan for all I care. I don't care where you send him. I frankly don't care because
he's not on the roster, in my opinion. I don't
know.
Where is he? Like Michael Case said, are we sure Ben Rortfett isn't just a holographic? Like, is he real? Like when Rortfett hadn't ever played for the Yankees, it's like, how can you even say he's real? Like, I remember someone called in into the Michael Case show and he's like, we don't even know if Ben Rortfett is real. I'll never forget that. But I mean, that's how I feel.
But we're being genuine when we say that. I mean, come on. You can't possibly think that just because a guy is big league talent, right? Yeah, he hasn't really proven it in New York, but he's done something in the past. Well, let me tell you something.
That baseball trade value thing is the worst thing to ever come out.
It's garbage. They say, oh, well, Efros, it says that his trade value is this, so that's the reason why.
His trade value was ahead of Clark Schmidt, like, the last time I checked.
I mean, that's the hard part about debating baseball, because people want to just acquire talent and then give up nothing for them. And they want to be like, well,
yeah,
that pitcher just has to be ass to want to go replace him with someone like
Miller.
Or they
like want
to
give up
Miller.
Like no. Way too much talent for like Bednar. And you're like,
oh, you're talking about the Pittsburgh guy?
Yeah. He's getting shelled this year. But every Yankee fan like last year was like, yo, what if we got rid of Peraza and Pereira and got Bednar? I was like, well, how are they winning that deal?
Yeah, wait a minute. Quick question for you. So this whole Mason Miller situation, every time I bring up Mason Miller, people bring up his injury history and just like his arm exploding. Is there some injury history that I'm unaware of?
I've never heard of his injury history. So, I mean, it's not to say it doesn't exist, but I've never heard that.
I'm trying to extend an olive branch and just have an understanding, because this is one thing I will say. There are a lot of pitchers, and I know we don't really talk about this, but there's a lot of guys in Major League Baseball, specifically starting pitchers, I guess specifically relievers as well, is that they had surgeries before they ever even got to pro ball. There's a lot of guys who have Tommy John heading into like rookie ball. They'll just have Tommy John. And frankly, you can say that about pretty much like everybody in Major League Baseball. Weren't we just 2 months ago, everyone saying, well, hey, the Yankees are delaying the inevitable. Gerrit Cole is just an elbow injury waiting to happen. Well, should we not have paid him $360 million? Of course we should have. No brainer. He's been the best decision the Yankees have made in years. And to be quite honest with you, when a guy's throwing 103 and you say, well, he's an elbow injury waiting to happen, he's throwing 103. Well, what do you want him to throw, 94? Because if he was throwing 94, would you be comparing him to Nolan Ryan? You wouldn't, would you? Because we did that with Nolan Ryan. Nolan Ryan, didn't people tell us he threw 105? Jake, do you remember people telling us that?
Yeah.
Nolan Ryan threw 105 miles an hour. If Nolan Ryan, as a rookie, was available for the Yankees to sign, should we not want him because he throws 105?
His all-time high was 108.
That's such a
What does that baseball look like, by the way? Do you even see it?
We don't have accurate readings, of course. So even if that was true, let's just pretend it was true. Okay. I think that would actually benefit our point further. Is that if those urban legends of Nolan Ryan throwing 108 miles an hour or even close to true, let's just say he threw 102, 103.
That's like Giancarlo.
It's exactly
Stanton.
What we're seeing out of Mason Miller. Yeah, did like Nolan Ryan have a better curveball, better circle changeup? Absolutely. But you can't sit up here and tell me that the reason to not go get a player is his stuff's just too wicked.
Well, he's too good. We're not there yet.
He's just too good. Okay, well, then what are we sitting here talking about? I should just shut down the podcast. If I can't bring in players that are too physical, LeBron James and Michael Jordan jump too high. They're too physical.
Oh, my God.
That's what they told me. I'm telling you. And when, obviously, Oakland's playing a pretty decent brand of baseball, they're actually playing really well. And that's not surprising. When you go see that bullpen, they are nasty over there. I've been taking a peek at like Dallas Braden's Twitter account. The dude tweets all the time about that bullpen, and rightfully so, to be quite honest with you. And
what's he going to do if they trade Mason Miller?
What's he going to do? I mean, I'll probably text his ass and ask him if he wants to be a Yankees fan. I know he's not going to shave that beard, so he's probably not coming.
I'm just saying.
And he's a diehard, dude. He's a big time Oakland fan. Of course, he threw the perfect game. He has great memories over there. He does his broadcast. He does his thing. But yeah, I mean, Oakland, it's a real shame, I would say, overall. And I hate to root against them because it.
But you
it
want Mason Miller.
Mason Miller. I want Mason Miller. Bad.
I mean, it's that simple.
Bad.
And like, you know, people look at it from the standpoint of, well, our bullpen is already the best in the league. I was like, yeah, but Mason Miller. Mason Miller, Clay Holmes, Ian Hamilton, Luke Weaver. I mean, just those four guys alone right now, the way they're pitching. Marinaccio is in AAA. I love the Yankees. They're killing it. The 30 and 15. Still have no idea what the hell they were doing sending down a guy with a sub-2 ERA, but I digress.
Yeah, we really haven't put that together. We usually try, because we're a podcast of details. We try and put the pieces together as a puzzle. We did not figure out what that was. Like, Marinaccio...
Today was a big day, by the way, for the minors. Ironically, Marinaccio gave up a game-winning hit.
Oh, gosh, damn it.
But today was huge. Jason Dominguez looked really good. I don't know if you saw some of the clips there.
I saw that.
Looks really good. Luis Cerna was dominant today. Only gave up 3 hits. I don't know if you've been keeping up with it, but Peraza looks MLB ready. Like, his bat's ready to go. He's hitting homers left and right. You know,
that's
obviously
a good problem to have. I think we need that problem. I'm not going to lie to you,
yes.
Jake. I think that's a really good piece to bring into this organization. And you know,
absolutely,
what's so interesting, by the way, you just mentioned Dominguez. Here's the craziest part. So I was listening to Michael Kay earlier this week, and Michael brought up a point, and I think it's absolutely fair to have this point, is that Jason Dominguez being healthy, there's no spot for him. That was his point. And regardless of what happens, if he's healthy, if he's ready to go, you've got Giancarlo Stanton. He basically talked about, just to sum him up, a fit. We've got Verdugo, who's already performing. He's playing well. You wouldn't take him out of the lineup. You've got Stanton playing well, of course. He's not going to come out of the lineup. And then, of course, you got Judge, right? And then you're talking about Juan Soto. He's not going anywhere. So where is the fit for Jason Dominguez? Well, to answer Michael Kay's point, what's interesting about that is that I think it's a situation where you'd say Jason Dominguez is probably a more valuable asset than Giancarlo Stanton. But of course, there's the catch-22 that the Yankees are paying him $32 million. So there's no situation where they're probably going to replace him. So that leaves Alex Verdugo, to which I told you earlier, Jake, I'm thinking that Dominguez is a better player and has a higher ceiling than Verdugo. But the hard part about this is that this is such a hindsight Hank opportunity for us to pick a take and say, oh my gosh, we fell apart in October. If we had just had that thump in the lineup from Jason Dominguez, it's a very easy take to offer. I'm here to tell you guys right now, it's really easy for us.
It already
to
happened with Volpe.
Say,
people it said as soon as they started losing, they're like, see, you don't fix what's not broken. And I'm like, Volpe batting leadoff, what if I told you it had nothing to do with his slump? It had nothing to do with the Yankees losing games. It was just a natural progression or regression in a 162-game season. What if I told you that? Because that's what happened. Him hitting in the leadoff spot didn't change anything, because people were talking about in the first four or five games, Gary, when he was hitting well in the leadoff spot, they were talking about the next series and then the series after that when he was in a slump.
That's right.
But now he's out of it, and we'll get to that. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, so it just seems like a situation where if Dominguez is healthy, yeah, and you can say, well, he's a better player than this guy in left field. Well, what if that better player, like what if you are better than a player who's already performing, who's already situated in his role? What now? And that's the point. And I think this is a very brave take by Michael Kay, because he's risking, I guess, being wrong. He's at least acknowledging the elephant in the room, which is that the Yankees don't have a spot for Jason Dominguez. And I think that's a fair take to have. It's interesting. I think someone can make the argument that Dominguez should just be in left field or DHing. You can make that argument, but it is very difficult to say, hey, we'll just let Giancarlo Stanton go out there and rake. And then, of course, if he slumps for a month, we'll just bring in Dominguez. Very easy for us to say, because we're not paying someone $32 million. It's a difficult call to make. And so far, the Yankees have been making all the right calls. So I just don't even know what the right call. I probably say just leave the guys in there who are performing, and tough luck on Dominguez. We kind of have this chip waiting in the minor leagues for the future.
Yeah, I hear you. I really don't think there's a wrong answer with what you're looking at. I think the bottom line is, come October, the Yankees are going to have, they're going to be loaded with depth. As long as guys stay healthy, right? You're going to have DJ LeMahieu on the bench. You're going to have Dominguez on the bench. You're going to have potentially on the bench. You're going to have Peraza. I mean, they're going to have, at that point, how are they not the best team on paper? You know, when they have those guys back, what's the biggest knock? We always say it's the depth on the bench. You're talking about having Trevino and Wells as your catchers, and then your bench guys, Peraza, Dominguez, and LeMahieu, and maybe another guy. But I think they'll want to keep a healthier bullpen, I would say, based on the way they use them. So
I like Peraza as a bench asset, because, you know, one thing I'll say about Peraza, and I said this at the beginning of this year, I do not like him.
I was at the Yankees-Mets game texting this guy, and he's like, I do not like Peraza.
I don't like Peraza.
He's the worst fielder I've ever seen in my life. That's what you texted me.
Yeah, no, so this is the thing. Peraza has the skill set to be the player that the Yankees hope him to be. He's got the skill set. He's not just ass. If he was terrible, then he just wouldn't be in this position. The Yankees aren't that bad at player development that they've got this guy, and they're like, we can't wait for him to get healthy. They don't say that about players they don't see anything in. So there is something there. Now, I'll say this. He's the type of player that he needs to be in a situation where if they throw him out on the field and then he performs, throw him out again, see what happens. We did this with Oswaldo, and we did it it was literally the exact thing the Yankees needed. Throw him out there. We were doing this little platoon action, and we say, if one of you separates yourself between you and Birdie, who we just made a move for, you'll play. Third base position's yours. We did that, and it worked to our benefit. And I said it then that it's going to work for Oswaldo. Why can't it work? You give Gleyber Torres a day at second base. You just throw Peraza over there. Throw him over there. And eventually, if he catches on, it puts the Yankees in a situation where you can make those hard decisions that we were saying are impossible to make. Like, what do we do with Gleyber Torres? Well, if you've got a guy who's coming off the bench who's giving you something, that decision later on doesn't seem so bad.
I think people have to be ready and have to brace themselves for the potential that Gleyber Torres is traded at the deadline.
There's potential.
I think there's a real possibility there. I think they would trade him for a really good arm in the pen. I think they'd get like a top-notch guy.
Okay.
And I mean, it could be for Mason Miller, you know, it could be for Clase. I mean, depending on how things go, I think Gleyber Torres would be at the center of that deal. And then, you know, obviously you have to have some prospects. But what people don't understand is if Gleyber has a bad year going in the deadline, he's still going to be in high demand. I mean, the Marlins tried to acquire him 3 years in a row. Anybody that is an established MLB player, It doesn't matter if they're hitting 210. I mean, we're going to see the same thing if, you know, come trade deadline. We've talked about this already, but Alex Bregman is still hitting poorly and the Astros are ready to trade him. We are going to deal with this same thing. So that's my thought. Is that just...
Yeah, and Gleyber Torres, by the way, so this is an expiring contract.
Yeah.
But Gleyber Torres is a 4-game hit streak, okay?
Yeah.
He's got 6 hits in his last 4 games. So his batting average has already crept up to .223. So, I mean, this is a player where you've mentioned, Jake, and this is something you actually brought this up first, was the type of maze that he has. Well, it seems like he's now trending in the right direction. That beginning of May didn't necessarily reflect what the past had, but it seems like he is. And he's 27. He's a ripe age for somebody. He's a very attractive asset for Major League Baseball, not just the Yankees. So the Yankees aren't going to be the only person after Gleyber Torres. I'm sure the Yankees are going to try their first bill of order is what do we do with Juan Soto if we don't get it done during the season? And then once that happens, can we get some type of discount for Gleyber Torres? Because frankly, you're going to be dealing with the end of the budget when it comes to Gleyber Torres. And that's, by the way, Jake, the only reason on this show that we're saying that Gleyber Torres won't return as a Yankee. I have no doubt Gleyber Torres will return to form, but what's the pecking order there?
Yeah.
What is the pecking order? And it seems like based on the outside looking in that Gleyber Torres is not first. He's not second. Like he might be third or fourth on the pecking order. And that leads you into a position where maybe another organization can sneak in there, get him at the deadline or get him in the offseason.
And the thing is, we've seen these trades before. Jordan Montgomery swap for Bader, which was surprising, and it worked out for both parties. Although, you know, of course, everyone wanted Jordan Montgomery back this year. I still think they made the right move and goes back to what we were talking about. But no, it's interesting because what is never talked about is that, and I know you're not a huge Peraza fan, but the Yankees were able to acquire Juan Soto without giving up any of Peraza, Cabrera, Spencer Jones, Dominguez, even Pereira. And I think there's a reason for that. And there's a reason why the Yankees turned down going after Luis Castillo 2 years ago. Because I'll tell you right now, okay, when the Reds were taking calls from the Yankees, they wanted Peraza, they wanted Volpe, and they wanted Dominguez, and the Yankees said no to all three. And I think since, you know, Peraza moved his way up the rungs in the minors, I think as a prospect, looking at how he was listed right behind Volpe, he's always kind of been unfairly, he's the trade bait, Volpe's the future. But what if the Yankees always looked at Peraza as the future with Volpe, and that Volpe and Peraza could grow together, and they did, you know, because at one point they were in AAA together. But what if Peraza ends up being the second baseman of the future? They have to have some plan here because it honestly doesn't make any sense. If he was going to be trade bait, they would have sold him high. And right now his stock is pretty low. So I'll say this, with Cabrera at third, I think they potentially found their third baseman of the future. I think Cabrera is getting better as time goes on. He's more comfortable there defensively. He's a .260 hitter. He's not swinging at, you know, the awful pitches he was swinging at last year. And he's got a clutch factor to him. And he's a switch hitter. Okay. So it's a little bit of an added element there. So
yeah, you have him. It. I mean,
yeah, you have him. And that changes the game because I think initially, Gary, that he was supposed to be the third baseman, Peraza. I think that's what their plan was. He would take over for LeMahieu. But like anytime you're talking about sports, things change. Like the Patriots moving on from Drew Bledsoe to Tom Brady. I'm sure they didn't have that in their mind that Drew
Bledsoe was going to get. Oh, you're hurt. You got a bum shoulder. Tom, get off your ass. You're going to go out in the field and you're going to be the greatest football player to ever live. The Patriots didn't know that was happening. They weren't developing Tom Brady to be the greatest football player of all time. He was just on the sidelines taking snaps, being a psycho, and taking it more serious than any other player in NFL history. And an injury put them in a situation that actually ended up to their benefit. And sometimes that happens in sports, happens in all types of sports. And baseball is no different. Injuries can put you in a situation. Like, obviously, we saw like what happened this offseason. We didn't know what was happening with Gerrit Cole. We could have pulled the trigger on another move, a move that we suggested should happen. They didn't make that move. Now, in hindsight, it was an excellent decision because now the Yankees are getting enough on the mound and they have their guys that they can pull the trigger on a trade or they can use them later. And the Yankees are in a situation where they're winning now and they look like, based on what's happening in the minor leagues, numbers-wise, we're going to win later as well. So that's a win for Brian Cashman. As much as people want to criticize him, I've criticized him. The Yes But Network broadcasts criticize him. And respectively, their job is to win now and later. It's not just their job to win in 2024, as much as that pains us to see. But yeah, when we talk about guys like Gleyber Torres, what to do with Juan Soto, what to do with Gerrit Cole, when to bring him back, all these are contingent upon how this affects this year's team and then also 2025 and beyond. And so when you look at Peraza and Oswaldo, I don't really know if Oswaldo, he could fit in at third base long term because, frankly, the third base market is pretty thin around baseball. There's not much out there. And if the Yankees can get something serviceable, guy hitting 250, 265, can field his position pretty well. And Oswaldo's kind of shown that he's developing defensively over there. He's learning on the fly. He's made some rookie mistakes, made some lazy mistakes, but he's getting a lot better. But also looking across the infield, it seems like the Yankees made the right decision, of course, with Anthony Volpe. I was one of those people who was like, I don't really know what to do with Volpe. I wouldn't really care if we traded him because you have to remember, Jake, when you do trade a guy like Anthony Volpe, you know, back when he was a prospect and he hadn't proven himself in the big leagues, part of that is contingent upon the Yankees also going out and signing a shortstop, right? You're talking about one of the big free agents in terms of Corey Seager, because that was the decision at hand. If the Yankees were going to go out and trade Volpe, that means you're going high-priced shortstop. And the Yankees decided to go young at shortstop, not bring in a Luis Castillo, who's obviously pitched very well in Cincinnati. So having said all this, to kind of sum it up, Brian Cashman seems to have pulled the right strings as far as 2024 goes. And that means a lot because it means we potentially could be aggressive if some of these organizations lose. Milwaukee was one of those teams I said that potentially could lose their way and we could become buyers of some products over there in Milwaukee in terms of Devin Williams and a few other guys they have over there, but also with the Mason Millers of the world. So we're in a situation to be a buyer, and that's always fun. It's always fun to be a podcaster when that happens. And hopefully, I mean, I can't even say hopefully, you know, we're going to be podcasting when that happens.
Probably do a live stream for it like we did last year.
You're right. Oh, that'll be a blast. Are you kidding me? Trade deadline live stream. It's going to be absolutely
with an actual baseball following instead of doing it on my Rams channel.
Oh, yeah. That? That's true. Yes. 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 Like, yes.
I think we had 15 people watching. No big deal. Last thing I want to point out, Tommy Canley struck out 9 guys today.
What?
Yep.
Wait, why was he on the mound long enough to strike out 9 guys?
He only pitched 4 innings. I saw that.
He struck out 9 players?
That's what I saw earlier. It was tweeted today.
He's a 2-pitch guy, isn't he?
I forget, actually. It's been a while, since I've watched Tommy Canley pitch.
He's the power changeup, right? He loves throwing the changeup. It's like 90. And then he's like 98. Does he have one more pitch? There's potential he's a 3-pitch guy, but I'm certain. I feel like I'm certain he's a 2-pitch guy. Striking out 9 guys is deadly. That's nasty. Yes.
Okay. So,
of course, we'd love to see.
I guess the tweet is inaccurate. I'm looking at it right now. Okay. 9 strikeouts in 4 innings in 2 games. Which is still really good. Okay.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah. So he's ready to go. They'll you know, they'll call him up soon. He's 34. I mean, this is more of like a year-to-year basis with him. But he's still valuable. I mean, when he gets up on the mound, he's staring down at you. You know, he's 6'1". That looks a little bit taller when you're on the mound and everything.
I would like to propose to put Caleb Ferguson on a rocket, ship him to Neptune. Tommy Canley on a bus immediately to Yankee Stadium.
What's funny that you say that is that I always forget. I'm sitting here trying to make you and I sitting here trying to make sense of Marinaccio. And not only is it crazy that Marinaccio isn't on the roster right now, he's on the AAA roster, but Caleb Ferguson is chilling there. And it's like, when you think about that, you're like, what are you doing? He's got a 6 ERA, man. He's the only.
And that's coming off of a scoreless inning. His ERA plummeted down to 6. It was 6.5, ladies and gentlemen. He's not performing well. Not only is he not performing well this year.
I still like the trade, though, because they got our guy Gonzalez.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. I completely agree with you. But Ferguson last year was very serviceable for LA. He had a 3.43 ERA. He pitched 68 times. That's a lot. Okay, yes. So he was highly productive for LA. And then, of course, he was dominant in 2020. He was actually very good in 2022 and 2020 during that COVID year. Very good. We're talking about an ERA of 182 and 289.
No, this is why the Dodgers traded him.
Yes, so you can see what the Yankees, based on numbers, we're looking at, because his career ERA is 3.6. It's highly productive, especially as a left-handed guy. But when you're talking about what he's produced as of now, I don't know if it's Matt Blake doesn't work well with him. I don't know if he's just having a bad stretch. It doesn't look good. And based on what Marinaccio is doing, based on what Canley is doing in terms of relief,
and Clayton Beter throwing 3 pitches and being like, nope, that's enough. We've seen enough of you.
Yeah, I don't know what these other guys haven't done that Ferguson necessarily has done.
Michael in 2024.
Tonkin. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't get it. Some of the roster decisions I can't understand. I'm not going to freak out about them because we're winning.
Yeah. But
if we do stop winning, we hit a rough patch, and then I look at the end of the roster and I see Caleb Ferguson and who's the name you just said?
Michael Tonkin.
Yeah, I might start complaining. I'm just telling you now, I'm giving you, it is a prerequisite to my complaining. If we are losing games and I see those two names at the end of the roster, I'm going to be talking about what guys are doing in the minor leagues and whether or not they should, they deserve that call up. And so I think that's fair.
I'm trying to see Kirk Cousins' cousin come back up. Jake Cousins. It's been a while, man. I miss him.
He's a fossil. He's gone.
Yeah, he's our boy, you know. Just
we made a whole video about this guy, and he's a minor leaguer.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. That's the name of the game. But currently in Scranton Wilkes-Barre, he's 1-0 with a 3.38 ERA, which, fun fact, is actually higher than his ERA in the MLB. So there's that. But his WHIP was 2.33 in the MLB.
That's terrible.
And in AAA, it's 1.12. So he isn't walking as many batters, but he also has only pitched 2 2/3 innings. So I don't know what they're doing with him. It says that
he's just not even pitching.
Yeah, it's like, is he hurt? He's just sitting there, I guess, waiting for his opportunity. But yeah,
can we ship him your chair so he can go sit down somewhere? Your $1,200 office chair and my little Office Depot $11 chair.
Oh, I'm man. We got to get Gary a Hayworth Fern.
Oh, I know. Yeah, we'll see.
It's worth it. But last thing I want to say before we wrap this thing up, there's only one pitcher who has a worse ERA than Caleb Ferguson. Can you guess who that is?
Worse ERA, and he's in the bullpen?
He's pitched.
Is he a position player?
Yeah, Jose Trevino.
I was going to say Jose Trevino. I swear to God I was going to say it. I'm not kidding you. When I said it was a position player, I was going to say it was Jose.
That's so funny. Yeah.
Yep.
He has got an 18 ERA and a 3 whip. And Caleb Ferguson has a 6 ERA and a 1.47 whip. And Dennis Santana, man, I expected more out of you. I don't know what's going on.
What are his numbers so far this year? Last thing we'll say.
Well, his whip is good, 1.19, but he's got a 4.58 ERA.
That's surprising. That's actually surprisingly high.
Well, you know, he's given up 9 runs and 17 and 2/3.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not gonna make up the numbers and start talking about, well, you know how the nerds do. They just start talking about weighted runs created and all these made up stats. all that shit does not matter.
You know what that is, though? Having that man, and I understand analytics. It's funny. I heard Michael Kay say one time this series, the Twins are a very heavy analytical team. I was like, oh, okay, so they're going to get shelled.
They're going to get farted all over. Heavy analytics mean that you're just staring down the barrel, of analytics. And you're just like, we don't care about runs scored or any of this stuff. His weighted runs created plus minus was this.
They're playing money ball and the Yankees are playing baseball. That's essentially what's happening. But I'm with you. And you know, when people say mental gymnastics, this is the type of stuff we're talking about. If you could create an analytical like metric for anything, eventually at some point, even the worst player in the league will be good at something. And how many times do you see the hot shot on Twitter? That doesn't exist, by the way, but the hot shot on Twitter, Gary, who has that thread, spent a lot of time. So I got to give him credit because I, as somebody that is kind of a stat nerd myself, I've spent a lot of time on, you know, threads like that. But it's just funny because how many times do you have one where it's like, I know Giancarlo Stanton is batting 110, but his WORCK72.
Oh, it's W. I think it's like WRC.
I don't know. I was making it up.
Weighted runs created plus. What are you talking about? That's not a stat. You guys, and let's be very clear.
Oh, man.
There's going to be in 2 years' time. Okay, so you're watching this podcast on this screen. 2 years from now, come back to this podcast and then say, they're talking about weighted runs created. Now look at the stat that's now been invented in 2026, because you're in 2026. Tell me the number that I'm not thinking about, because there will be one.
Oh, yeah. Okay? It's going to be
there,
like,
there will be a new one.
Wins above run replacement when a pitcher steps off the mound or something. It's like
it'll be like wins above minor leaguer. Wins above all-star.
Oh my god. Wins all-star above manager. Projection.
Like, they'll say what did and all the average all-star that year in that position would have produced this in comparison to this player. That will like be the number that you get. And the only reason the numbers exist is so that people who went to like Columbia and Harvard can continue to get these ridiculous salaries as Major League Baseball executives and decision makers. They're not smart. They're smart at school. They're not smart at baseball, which is why absolutely none of them played baseball. That's why it didn't happen. A lot of times, in order to be really smart at something, you need to have experience in something, not just studying numbers. So it's really good to know numbers, but it's also better to know baseball because we're playing baseball.
And traditional numbers are always king, in my opinion. ERA, WHIP. I've never cared about wins and losses except for...
Yeah, some of them are outdated. I think we can all agree, but let's get serious. Not all these numbers are useless.
No. Batting average, no matter how many times an analytical nerd tells you it's not, batting average is still... Batting average is the Bitcoin of all crypto. You have all sorts of cryptocurrency that tries to outdo Bitcoin. Oh, this is
the next Bitcoin. Known when you were talking about GameStop and all that shit, you were going to bring in Bitcoin or whatever that stock you're shorting on.
Well, you know me. I love the analysis there. But no, it's The analogies, not analysis. But no, I mean, it makes sense though, right? It's like the same thing, you know, guy says, no, I don't have Twitter or Facebook. I have High Five. And you're like,
what?
That it's no different. And if you come out and all of a sudden you're like, High Five is going to change the world. High Five is the number. I'm not making this up. This is an actual thing. High5.com. I don't know if it's still around, but it was back in the day.
Oh, so it's gone. Kind of like those monkeys that people were trying to sell me for $10,000. People were trying to sell me pictures of a monkey and go, no, it's not just a picture of a monkey. It's a specific, you can't get that picture. You can't just copy and paste it. I go, oh, wow, that's interesting. It's still worth nothing. It's not worth
anything.
You're
talking about NFTs?
Yes, NFTs aren't worth shit. They're not worth anything. Well, they never will be.
Well, they completely fell off.
Good.
Shocker. But
good. I saw Justin Bieber bought one for like $1 million. I'm like, you're a dumbass. Like, you're a great singer and he can't dance, but
I'm sure
he's a great artist.
You see bought what I'm saying
for $1 million, you're an idiot.
You see what I'm saying though? It's like that guy that's like, yeah, High Five is gonna be way better than Facebook. And it's like Facebook's already established as like the number one kind of social media thing of what High Five is. And Someone says that, and they're the people that are like, well, H2 positive is going to be a better thing than average. Batting average is never going away. It's never going away. Okay.
Not on this podcast, it ain't.
Well, it definitely is not going on this. Because here's the thing. If batting average is just too basic for you, that's what OPS is for. And if you don't like OPS, then you could just simplify it and make it slugging and make it on base percentage. Some people don't even look at the slugging percentage because they don't care. I look at all of it. As long as it's not some made up stat that happened 2 years ago, I'm all game. I'm not going to look at sabermetrics. I do not care enough. I don't even understand half of it. But yeah, Gary, I'm glad because I remember when you came to me with the idea of this show. And I remember what I said to you. I said, I don't know if I could talk baseball nowadays because all these analytics and all this, you know, mumbo jumbo, I can't follow it. And you're like, Jake, I don't really care about it either. We're just going to talk baseball the way we do it. Your attention to detail, the way you do your RAM stuff, and it'll work. And I think it's working. So, yeah, for those of you that were offended by our analytics talk, sorry, is what it is. I truly, analytics is a tool. It's meant like this stand that is supporting my laptop in front of me.
It doesn't run the show, but it's useful.
It's useful, but I can't run an entire show just using the stand. When you take away the computer, the stand doesn't mean jack shit.
When our show gets big enough, I'm just going to leave my stand here to make you do your show by yourself with my stand. We'll just see if it runs a podcast. We'll see if it just talks back to you and does all the stuff that analytics says it should be able to do.
Well, look at this. I got this charger, you know, for the phone. Nice. What happens when you take the phone off?
Does it reach out and grab the phone?
It doesn't charge anything. It's
our analytics department hasn't figured out a way to get it to do that.
Our analytics department. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, we'll have to talk to the Yankees unloaded analytics team. That's what we're going to say from now on. Yeah, the Yankees unloaded analytics team is going to get on that.
Wait a minute. When this show gets huge, because it will, we are going to have a huge staff, and we're not going to just call them the Yankees unloaded team or whatever, or like
we're gonna call them the nerds.
We're just gonna call the editors and all the people who do these very specific things for our show and are very helpful and necessary. We're just gonna call them the analytics department. It's gonna be the best thing ever. Our highly paid analytics department. We are going to call them that. I promise you guys.
Yeah. Well, that's gonna do it. Parting words here, just so you know, the Yankees team ERA is 2.98. Feel good. Feel very good. This is a very good baseball team right now. One of the best in the majors. Would have been one of the best last year, the year prior, and the year after that. I mean, they really are a World Series contender if they keep this shit up. They really are. And it should only get better. We know baseball, we know how it works, but getting Cole back, getting Peraza, getting LeMahieu, getting back Dominguez, hell, we talked about him, getting back Canely. That all matters in the end. So I'm very excited for it, Gary. But that's going to do it for us. So we appreciate you guys, and we'll see you guys again very soon. Won't be another three games that you have to wait. We're going to get back to our regularly scheduled program, but we figured we'd give you guys a little longer episode to make up for all of that. So hope you guys enjoyed, and take care and pray for a Twins fan near you.
And like this video.